and get back to it, because we're finally getting a lot of snow here on the East Coast, which is great. So the snowshoeing is great, but I definitely want to add. So I want to thank you, and I want everyone to stay tuned, because in a moment we're going to be joined by Chef Kevin Gillespie from Bravo's hit show Top Chef Las Vegas. So keep listening. That's the experience on Top Chef Las Vegas and his amazing restaurant, the Woodfire Grill. Kevin was a finalist with two brothers with very different cooking styles and personalities. Kevin won our hearts, not to mention more elimination challenges than any other chef, with his home-style cooking, authenticity, warmth, and kindness. Kevin is an executive chef and partner at the acclaimed Atlanta restaurant, Woodfire Grill, a restaurant that takes pride in supporting local, sustainable, organic agriculture, as well as responsible animal stewardship and sustainable fishing practices. Kevin, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so thrilled to have you here. My husband and I are really huge fans. You're such a nice person. Now, speaking of nice people, your mom was on the last episode of Top Chef, and she was so warm and lovely, and I immediately was like, oh my gosh, that's why he's such a sweetheart. Now, how did your upbringing affect your love of cooking?
Well, I mean, my family is extremely close, and in fact, my grandmother sort of lives at the top of the road that my parents and all of my aunts and uncles live on, so they all have bought houses or built houses subsequently on the same street, so it's a very, very close-knit upbringing for sure. And, you know, that's sort of incorporated itself into our day-to-day. We ate breakfast at my grandmother's house every morning before we went to school or to work. And so I think that food became, like, sort of this center focal point for all of the things that we did together as a family.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, when did you get in the kitchen and start getting interested in cooking? Were you young? Did you cook with your grandmother, or did you just enjoy her food and that influenced you?
No, I tried to help her as much as I could. You know, was a much better cook, and I still am a much better cook than I am. But I tried to help as much as I could. I was really interested in it ever since I was a small child. I'd make her cut on cooking shows while she was cooking, so I could sit in the living room or next to the kitchen and watch Grandpa or someone like that on television while she was making us lunch or cooking dinner. And so it was a very early start with my sort of obsession with being in the kitchen.
Oh, that's nice. Now, I've read that you were accepted to MIT and then you decided to go into cooking school, to get into cooking instead, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's very much what happened. It's a strange sort of story, but I had an epiphany my senior year of high school and just decided that really my happiness was not going to be, would have very little to do with how well I did financially in life, more than it would with me fulfilling what I felt was sort of my obligation to the world. I thought that cooking was really the thing that I was supposed to do, and I couldn't shut off that voice that kept telling me that I just had to. Absolutely, and I was a little worried, honestly. I mean, as most kids would be, but my mother, especially, was extremely supportive, and in fact, said that she was happy that I had the clarity to understand what I was really supposed to do so early on.
And yeah,
so, that was her response to me telling her I wasn't going to MIT.
Well, your message is so important. I mean, I think more people need to follow what's in their heart and do what they love, whether there's money there or not, because that's what's going to make you happy, obviously. Now, tell us about Top Chef. Had you watched the show, and then did you just say one day, I just think that would be a great thing to do? How did that come about?
No, it was actually, it was different from both of those situations. I really hadn't watched the show. I watched a small amount when my friend Richard was on the show, just because it was sort of the novelty of like, oh, wow, I actually know somebody that's on this television show. but it was a very, you know, sort of short-lived thing. I honestly don't have television at my home, so I don't watch television. What happened is that the producers of the show Top Chef contacted me and asked me if I would be interested in being on the show. So it took a little bit of soul searching because I wasn't sure if I wanted to. I had this sort of conflict in my mind and in my heart with whether or not being on television would cheapen the quality of what we did at my restaurant, which has always been my focus. And I decided that, you know, I was going to take the opportunity because I don't think I would ever have the chance to have my opinion and my values heard by so many people ever again. So I decided that the show might be an avenue for that.
Oh, I'm so glad that you did. And how was the overall experience for you?
turned out to be very different than I expected it to be. I wasn't sure really what to expect, but I felt like that it was going to feel like we were making a television show the whole time. You know, I had this feeling that somehow the process of doing this was going to feel very TV-like, and that really wasn't the case. They did a great job of sort of blending into the background and just letting us live our lives in that house and during the competition. And so that was a very nice part about it. And also, I really think that I learned a great deal from being on the show, and I feel like I learned a lot of it from myself. You know, there were definitely my fellow competitors, Michael and Brian and Jennifer and Eli, and those people who really taught me some new stuff, but I think that it put you in the position that you had to rise to the occasion, and it made you dig deep and trust in your skill set and expand your skill set, and that was something that I never would have expected from the show.
Yeah, there was so much pressure, you know, especially during those quick fire challenges. I mean, how did people, it just amazes me how, you know, people can come up with things so quickly. Like, here's, you
right.
know, an onion and half a celery, go, you know. I mean, it could
right.
be more than that, but it's amazing to me. Did your mind, did it take, it seems like you didn't even have a second to think about it, you just, because you had such a short amount of time. How did you feel in those moments?
Well, it actually is, it's not as challenging maybe as it looks.
Okay.
Only because you have to take into account that this is what we do every day. You know, it's our profession,
okay.
and it's what we've been spending years and years and years working on. And so, for everyone else, what is seems like an incredibly sudden moment, for us, not quite as sudden, because we've been preparing for this for years, you know. And so, inside our heads, we're sort of programmed to be able to look at food and immediately start dissecting it and coming up with different ideas. And so, I think that the quick fires are tailored to see what chefs really have learned to do that.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I guess, yes, obviously I'm not a chef, and so that's why when my husband and I were watching, we were like, how the heck did, you know,
no,
he gave us a minute, we'd come
stressful.
Up with like a fried, like, we'd have like a, I don't know, a mashed potato or something.
No, I mean, it's absolutely incredibly stressful, there is no doubt about it, but you find sort of after the first or second day, you find a way to just sort of, okay, all right, I have 30 minutes, I know in my head what kind of things I can make in half an hour, you know?
Yeah.
So you start to just work around those parameters. And I think, well, at least my strategy, I'm not sure what everyone else's was. Like, my strategy was very much a, okay, if I have 30 minutes, I'm making something that I can do in 20 minutes, because the added stress and sort of complications of running around in a kitchen that's foreign to you are going to come back. And I think that strategy worked out in my favor quite a few times. You know,
it sure
was,
did.
I was able to complete what I needed to do as opposed to missing a component or having a really difficult time with it.
That was
kind of my strategy.
Yeah, well, you have a great strategy. And like I mentioned in the introduction, you won 5 of the elimination challenges. Which one was your favorite? Is there a particular one you really enjoyed?
You know, there were a lot of them that I liked. I really liked the pigs and peanut challenge, obviously, because of my sincere appreciation for pork, but also just because I enjoyed the fact that we had to pair wine and food together, and that's something that we do at my restaurant every single day, and we take it really, really seriously, you know, trying to understand food and wine pairings on a different level, rather than just using the classic sort of, okay, well, this goes with this, like trying to understand the subtle nuances of where the wine is produced and sort of the smaller subtleties of it and pairing it that way, and so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that looked like a lot of fun. Now, speaking of pork, one thing that I mentioned again in your introduction, was that your restaurant, the Woodfire Grill, supports local, sustainable, organic agriculture as well as responsible animal stewardship and sustainable fishing practices. Was that your vision from the beginning with the Woodfire Grill?
It was. That was when we came and joined the grill without, and that was really the basis for what we chose to do here, and that sort of dictated the way that we were going to cook the food, the way the menu was approached, and the way that we were going to offer options to guests, you know, and that was, it's not always been an easy path for us. It's never been a conflict in my mind as far as a moral question. You know, I always knew that was the only way I could possibly operate was that I had to support those values, but the challenge was that it limits what you can give people a lot of the time, and unfortunately, until there's a stronger mass awareness of exactly what these values mean, then there will always be people that come into your restaurant expecting something that's not available to them.
You know, it's interesting because on Thursday I'm actually interviewing a woman named Annie Bond, and she works for National Geographic, and she just wrote a book called True Food, and it's exactly about that, about shopping locally and sustainable and organic agriculture and responsible animal stewardship, and it's fascinating, and she gives a lot of tips. I just wanted to, you know, let you know. know that might be a book. That would be really interesting too.
Yeah, I'd actually love to see that book. So
yeah, True Food, and I'll be interviewing her on Thursday, so I can let you know when the interview's up on my site. Like this one will be in about a week, and it's really interesting because I didn't know that much about that. So that means you have to get everything locally. Is that if you can tell us a little
bit? For the most part, we can source some things from a little bit further away, but they have to be like really cherry picked. We try and obviously defer to what's available to us locally first, and so that actually drives the composition of the dishes. Sometimes people are like, "Wow, how did you come up with that combination?" Because that's what's available right now. Like, and so you find that you create dishes out of what is readily available to you. Like, a good example is that this past week, the first course on our tasting menu, which is sort of like our piece de resistance, that's our exhibition of exactly what this restaurant is all about. The first course was a carrot. It was a dish based around baby carrots because they were just coming into us by the box full, and they were so gorgeous that I felt like, we had to do something that just let these little tiny baby carrots shine. And so we made a dish from that, and it seems crazy when you think about like the cost of a tasting menu, and when you think about the fact that we're doing this elevated sort of modernized traditional food, and yet we've made a dish that really soul composition is based around one vegetable, and I think it was an incredibly successful dish, and I think that it did a lot for some people. I got a ton of comments from people who either said A, that they don't really like carrots and they loved it, or B, like they really appreciated that we had the courage to sort of step up to the plate and put something out on our tasting menu. Our very first dish that you're going to try on our tasting menu is something that really celebrates exactly what is available to us right now in the closest vicinity to where we are, and it gives it a sense of place and a sense of time, I think.
Well, I think that's what would bring people to the restaurant as well. I mean, people who share those values.
Absolutely.
And they must be really thrilled to find a place like that. I mean, I'm telling Annie Bond about your restaurant on Thursday.
Awesome. Yeah, we definitely get people in here who celebrate the same things that we do, but what we also get is people in here who don't know as much about it, but they're intrigued. Something about what we do has intrigued them enough that they're willing to come in and give us a shot. And if I get the opportunity to have them see what we're doing and to hear sort of the message of what we're doing, then I think that's an amazing thing. I've never wanted to stand on a high horse. I've never wanted to be preaching to people about what I think is the right way versus the wrong way to look at food. But given the opportunity to share my beliefs with people, if even one person leaves this restaurant and does a little bit of research or buys someone like Annie's book, then I feel like we've done something more than just feed people and send them out the door. And that was always what this restaurant was about. I bought this restaurant because I needed to know that I could find a way to make a difference in my community and hopefully nationally, and give people just one more perspective on the way that I think food is so much more important than the way it's portrayed in modern American society.
Yeah, well, you are just, I'm just amazed. I'm speechless. You're fabulous. I don't know if you have time, but if you could, like, travel the country and spread your message, you have such a wonderful way of speaking, and you're just such a, my husband always teases me because I watch these shows, and I feel like I know the people. I'm like, oh, my gosh, it's heaven. You just have such a nice way about you. By the way, my father and my stepmother live in Georgia. I think they're about 45
Wonderful.
Minutes from Atlanta. I don't
Where
think
are
down
they?
There enough. They're in Canton.
Okay, yeah, maybe 45 minutes, not that far, I don't think.
Oh, I'm sending them over there, and the next time I get out there, I'm definitely coming. Now, when did you open your restaurant?
We purchased this restaurant from the founder of it, Michael Tuohy, about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
It was called Woodfire Grill from the very beginning. We kept the name Woodfire Grill because I actually had previously worked for Michael. Michael sort of mentored me for a number of years on understanding what it meant to cook locally and sustainably, and I think that he had a huge impact in the way that I looked at those things. And when I bought his restaurant, I felt like we owed it to the values of what this restaurant was founded on to continue to keep it as Woodfire Grill. I felt like Woodfire Grill wasn't Michael Tuohy. It was bigger than that. It wasn't Kevin Gillespie. It was bigger than that. It was just this picture and this message of what this restaurant always stood for, because when Woodfire Grill was built about 8 years ago, it really wasn't the only restaurant in Atlanta that was pushing this idea that you have to think a little bit more about where your food comes from. You have to understand that your choices have consequences to the world around you, and they're greater than just you. And so I wanted to keep this name. And so we took it, and in my eyes, what we did was we breathed sort of a new life into it, and we gave it a slightly different vision. You know, it was that we were going to cook food based on the same values, but a different person was going to be doing it. It was going to be the food that I saw as the next evolution to where sustainable and local food really could go.
Now, you mentioned earlier, you called it modernized traditional. So that's,
yeah, you know,
I know you do a lot of traditional cooking, and that's what I really like. And I know that some of the folks on the show was, you know, thought it was too simple, but that's what I like. And it was so amazing. I remember Tom Colicchio once said something about that your flavors were not simple.
Right, exactly. And that's what we try and do. My opinion, and this is sort of, to put it in a nutshell, I mean, I could write an entire book on my opinion.
I'm hoping you will, by the way.
I feel like tradition is the basis for innovation. I think that until you fully understand and grasp the values of the traditional foods of this country and why they are the way that they are, then you don't really have the capacity, nor do you have the right to change them, in my opinion. And so what we do at Woodfire Grill is that we try to embrace those traditions, understand them on a more core, deeper level, and understand how then we can bring something new to them. You know, I want to give each dish a level of sort of complexity and newness that you didn't expect from them. But I also want each one of them to have this embedded level of comfort and familiarity so that people are never turned off by what we do, so that they don't walk in and think that I'm just some young kid who's trying to reinvent the wheel. In fact, I have a deeper respect for tradition than many people do. But what I want to do is I want to add my own stamp and my own mark on it, but I want to do so in a way that seems thoughtful, in a way that seems like it has respect for the values that created the dish in the first place.
Yeah, well, you definitely
are.
I'm just so flattered that you were on the show. And again, if you can tell people, how do they learn more about you and more about the restaurant?
Absolutely. People can go to the restaurant's website, www.woodfiregrill.com. You'll see all of our new menus. We try and upload them every day since we do change the menu every day. You'll get some contact information on the restaurant, see what's going on here. And then another really great way to see what I'm personally up to, is through Facebook. You know, we started a fan page for myself when the show first aired, and we're now 12,000 fans strong. And it gives me a great forum to tell people, like, hey, I'm gonna be doing this symposium this weekend, or I'm gonna be doing a demo, or like in March, Eli and I are gonna be cooking against each other, sort of Top Chef style in Charleston at Food and Wine. And so all the little fun things and the places that I'm going to and the restaurants that I'm really into at that time and the books that I want people to read about, I kind of use my Facebook page as a forum to talk about that. So anyone, go on there, Chef Kevin Gillespie at Facebook, and you check that out, and you'll see what's going on with us.
Now, how's Eli doing? He seemed like such a nice guy.
Eli's doing really well. He actually has just relocated to New York, and he took a position at a restaurant called Solo in Manhattan. So he's going to be there for a little while. I think Eli needed a break from Atlanta, as strange as that sounds.
Yeah, I love Atlanta.
Because Eli really is proud to be from Atlanta, proud to be from here, and he needed a little break because Eli's food has a sense of sort of newness to it that he needed to expand, and I think he wanted to see how he could do in New York City. New York City is definitely a proving ground for a lot of chefs, and Eli got a fantastic opportunity, and so he's up there for a little while, but, you know, I feel confident that sooner than later he's going to be back down here.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's exciting. I love New York. I love Atlanta, too. I haven't, you know, I've only been there a couple times, but I just thought it was wonderful. It's so beautiful. Well, Kevin, I want to thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
And, again, be sure to check out Annie Bond, and I will go on your Facebook and, you know, let you know when that'll be up there. I hope you have a wonderful
Lovely.
Day.
Thank you so much. You, too.
Oh, yeah, it was terrific. Now, if people want to contact me, then go to sisterhealthradio.org. Now, join us Thursday. We have four guests in the hour, so it's going to be tight, but it's going to be great. From 9:30 to 9:45, Laura Dean, co-author of her latest cookbook, Cook Yourself Then Faster. You can have your cake and eat it, too. That is from the Lifetime television show, Cook Yourself Then. From 9:45 to 10, Dr. Scott Patton, author of Health Beyond Medicine, A Chiropractic Miracle. 10 to 10:15, Amy Hendel, author of Fat Families, Thin Families. And from 10:15 to 10:30, Annie Bond from National Geographic, author of her just released book, True Food, 8 Simple Steps to a Healthier You. So be sure to tune in. Everyone have a great week. Keep being healthy. Thanks again, Kevin. Thanks to the best engineer in the world, David. Take care. Bye-bye. Sure. Has devoted her entire professional life to achieving excellence in hair design and education. She